Everyone, and welcome to minute 32 of season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Hal Bryan of the October Sky Minute. Welcome back to the show, Hal.
Thank you, Rob. It's good to be back, and this is glad we're going to be able to pick off where we left off yesterday.
Yeah, but today we've no dialogue.
Yes, exactly. So now, do you and I have to remain silent for 30 minutes? I think that's going to be impossible.
I think it's going to be impossible also. But again, we still get as we talked about yesterday, we get John Williams' music throughout this entire minute. Yes. So that's helpful. You know, it's not a bland minute, I guess, from that perspective.
No, not at all. Right. It's very evocative.
Yeah. Completely. So minute 32 begins with the music continuing as a woman does dishes and ends with a door opening. So we ended things yesterday with a woman who, anyone who's seen this movie knows that this is apparently Mrs. Ryan, little Jimmy Ryan's mother, doing dishes. You know, and we ended yesterday, and we're starting today with the same amazing shot of her doing dishes, but in the distance you see a car coming towards her farmhouse. And she's, you know, we talked yesterday about the fact that she was basically just doing for a service of two, but you know, she completely fills up that sink. Yeah, you'd think that for a service of two, you wouldn't need as much water in there in order to. You know, just wash a few dishes and cups and silverware. But it, you know, I guess she's used to having, you know, the whole family there, you know, sure. doing everything. So, all right, why not? So she's not really paying much attention to what's going on outside. She's too busy, doing the dishes. And then the shot changes, and we see a very prominent focus on a red flag. With a white banner on the inside that has four blue stars on it.
Yep.
Okay. Hal, do you know what that is?
Yeah. So that was a thing that started. It started in World War I in the U.S. and it wasn't didn't get too widespread. And I think that's largely just because of our involvement in World War I wasn't all that long lived. And then it got more and more common during World War II, although it didn't really become an official thing, as I understand it, till sometime maybe in the early 60s, excuse me. But anyway, it became a tradition for families that had service members deployed to display a flag like this with a blue star for every family member that was deployed. So of course, in this case, we see four. And this is actually another thing that confirms for us, okay, well, Dad isn't likely in the service. He's not, if he's around, maybe he's working in a factory or maybe he's no longer with us, but you know, we've got one blue star for each of the brothers. And, there became a reference to that when one, was lost, then they would sew a slightly smaller gold star over the blue one. They'd leave a little bit of blue border, but otherwise, and then, you know, that family then became known as a gold star family, meaning they had lost someone in the war.
Right. Okay. Excellent. So I'll go a little bit more into that. You touched on it really well, but so the idea of a blue star service flag, as you said, it originated in 1917 during World War I, when a U.S. Army captain designed and patented it in order to honor his sons who were serving on the front lines. The banner features blue stars on a white background for each active duty service member of the family, but you have a maximum of five that are allowed, which is a little strange. I don't know why they would say it's a maximum of five, but you know, I wouldn't able to find out why there's a maximum. And it quickly became popular amongst other parents whose children were also serving in World War I. And in September of that year, an Ohio congressman declared it as the official service flag. stating the world should know of those who give so much for liberty, the dearest thing in all the world to a father and a mother, their children. During World War II, the Department of War, which was the predecessor of the Department of Defense, formally specified measurements of the flag so that it could be manufactured and distributed to military families. And it's also identified when a flag can be flown and who can fly it. On December 1st, 1967, the DoD officially authorized the Blue Star Service flag, you know, as an official military flag. So very, very interesting. So you mentioned the fact that, you know, when unfortunately a family loses a you know, one of their service members, so it's changed from a blue star to a gold star. Right. And it's the, you know, it's the, you know, they say it's the gold star family is a designation that nobody ever aspires to be a part of.
Right.
Right. And, you know, the idea that you know, it's for parents, siblings, spouses, and children of service members who've lost their lives, you know, in the line of duty. And the title is meant to honor the service members' ultimate sacrifice, which, while acknowledging that the family's lost grief and continued healing is still needed. And the number of Gold Star families that have lost loved ones, you know, during the World Wars, Korean War, Vietnam, other conflicts, I mean, that number is just really, really high. So, you know, they claim that just between 9/11 and 2019, there were more than 16,000 in non-combat circumstances, while another 7,000 died, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan.
My gosh.
So, yeah, those are pretty high numbers for the whole idea of it. And I mentioned before about you know, when the Blue Star became Blue Star flag became official. So in 1936, FDR actually designated the last Sunday of September as the National Gold Star Mother's Day.
Oh wow, that I had never come across.
Right, and Obama in 2015 changed it to include Gold Star Mothers and Family Day, and that's still celebrated last Sunday in September, or celebrated, I don't know if that's the right word, commemorated on that day. So yeah, that's you know, pretty interesting, the whole thing.
Right.
They also have a Gold Star Wives, which was a lapel button that they were to give out, the way they gave out to widows in starting in August
1947. Gosh.
Yeah. So over time, they started adding more than just parents and spouses and things right. like that.
That's a powerful symbol. And,
yeah.
Yeah. And the way that hey, it's good that the camera lingers on it for just a moment so that if you do recognize it or don't and look it up later, it tells a little bit more of the story.
Correct. Now the actress who plays Mrs. Ryan, who's credited as Mrs. Margaret Ryan. Do you have any idea who she is?
No, I don't think I can place her without cheating and going to IMDb.
Okay, so her name is Amanda Boxer. She was born in 1948, which means that when they made this movie, she was 50. This woman looks a little older. I mean, I'm 50, and I know you're around the same age as I am. This woman looks a lot older than we are.
she does in many ways, and it's interesting though because I don't know if you and I have ever had this conversation, but it comes up a lot that you know, I don't know how to put it, like old was older,
yes.
You know, before our time. Like you
yes.
go back and one of the better examples is you think about the movie Cocoon and the what was that, very early 90s or
80, 85.
Mid 80s then. And you know, Wilford Brimley, I think, was 48 in that movie. And he's playing a senior citizen in a, you know, an old folks home. And it's remarkable. So many actors, and some of that, you have actors who can play older than they are. But even just sort of across the board, when you look at, you know, other actors of prior eras, and they all seem to be, I mean, to me, they seem a lot more mature than I am. But the downside is they also look a lot older than I've ever felt.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Right. So Wilford Brimley was born in 1934. So it means so he was probably 50 when they were filming it. But
Okay.
Who was his wife? Maureen Stapleton, right? I think in the movie.
Was it Maureen Stapleton? Yeah. Okay.
I believe so. And she's 10 years older than him. You know.
Jeez.
And so again, but she was 60 and considered, you know, and you know, someone who was you know, ready for the old age home type of thing. I don't know.
Right. Wow. Well, here's to getting younger.
That's right. For sure. That's interesting when you think about it. I mean, again, this, so, you know, this actress is around 50. You know, through this movie. But I mean, I guess that sort of makes sense, because, you know, Matt Damon was maybe 25 when this came out.
Right.
So, and he's the youngest of four children. So, yeah. Okay. And I guess that makes sense that the character would be at least 50, you know, that type of thing.
Sure.
Right. So after lingering, you know, it pans to the side from the blue stars, and then we see through the window. You know, she's still washing the dishes. Again, a great shot. You know, because we see it through the curtain itself. You know, you have the lace curtain, and you can just see her hands. You know, washing the dishes on the other side, pulling out a dish, and then, you know, the reflection in the window is just great. Because she sees, you know, she's looking out the window, and we see like a picket fence in the reflection, but we don't see anything beyond that. And then she looks down, and then she looks back up, and she realizes that someone is coming close. And then, you know, once again, the shot is from her side, where she, you know, the curtain is pulled down a little bit. And we see the reflection, and we see the car coming closer. Again, just amazing shots. Because of the reflection, it looks as if the car is basically driving across her face.
Right.
You know, she's looking at that. And, you know, you can see concern on her face. She doesn't know what's going on. You know, because it's interesting because, you know, the whole idea that she's looking at this. And, you know, she has four sons that are right now overseas, you know, so, you know, makes her wonder, okay, you know, who are they coming to tell me is no longer here?
Right.
You know, but I wouldn't think that in her wildest nightmares, she would imagine that they're coming to tell her that three or four of her sons are dead and that they all died within a few days of each other.
Yeah, I think that would be inconceivable, but I think she's probably also smart enough to know, and no matter what wishful thinking there might be, an army staff car coming to your house at this point in history it couldn't possibly be bringing any good news.
Correct. Well, you never know. In a month from now, she'll be getting an army staff car bringing home Jimmy Ryan. So
yeah, that's true.
So who knows about that? But in general, the odds are. Hoping.
The odds are it's going to be bad news, but no way that would she think it would be as bad as we know it is.
Yeah, it's true. And then she lets go of the curtain, and you know, she stops doing her dishes, and walks what looks like in somewhat of a daze. Again, obviously. towards the door to the house, And as she's about to reach the door, okay, if you freeze frame it, you can see on the mm-hmm. right hand side a few pictures.
Yeah,
there's a few things there.
On top of that beautiful old upright radio.
That's right. That's correct.
So, and I see a mistake in one of those pictures, and I'm wondering if you do too. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, one of the pictures, but there are three pictures there. Okay, one of them is a lone soldier. We don't know who. We can't tell who it is, obviously. And then right. the other one above is sort of cut off, so we don't see who the picture is of. Okay, but this could go back to our theory from yesterday that if her husband is no longer around, maybe that's a picture of her husband.
Sure.
Again, there's no way of knowing because you know, we can't see what's in the picture.
Right.
So it doesn't. And then there's a picture of four soldiers together. All right. And in before we get to the picture itself, did you notice the thing that's right in front of them?
Yeah. It's what I'm assuming is a little, it's red, white, and blue, like a little tabletop V for victory flag. But mm-hmm. I don't know anything about that as an artifact. I'm just making an inference.
No, I don't either. I wasn't
like a V, but it's,
I wasn't able to find out what it is, but I just thought it was very interesting that she has, because there's a flag there and there's a, you know, and then there's this V for victory.
Right.
Which, as you said, is a red, white, and blue.
Yeah. And you can see the center flag mostly just in the shadow. It's you don't see it as well in, you know, on the actual item. You don't really get a great look at it. And then, you know, there's a fourth picture all the way to the right of the frame that shows some kids and looks like, you know, presumably childhood photo of at least some of the boys.
I don't think we see that. Oh, we see part of it. Right. We see one of them.
About half of it.
Right. We see half of one of them at 58 seconds or whatever. Yes.
Yeah. In my cut, I see all of one and most of a second kid.
Right. You see one kid. Right.
Exactly.
And it looks like they're playing baseball.
Two kids.
It looks like they're playing baseball. I don't know why I get that impression. Yeah. It looks like one of them might be holding a bat and the other one's crouched down. That's
true. That kid toward the top of the picture with, you know, a little touring cap could be holding a baseball bat, and I can imagine a glove in the other kid's hand as he's kind of crouched down.
Exactly. So it's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible. Okay. Now anyway. back to your question about the picture. About, you said that there's looks like there's a mistake here. Okay.
Maybe a continuity thing.
Okay. Well, the one thing that I would say is it looks like on each of their helmets they have some sort of symbol, and because these are all privates, they wouldn't have anything. They wouldn't have, you know, an officer symbol on their helmet. That would be the what I would think you're possibly talking about, but maybe it's something else.
It actually is something else. That's a great catch. Like, as I go back and forth through it, I imagine I see some rank insignia on the helmets, and then I say, no, maybe that's just a highlight of the picture. But if each of them have it, that wouldn't make sense. But I think we're supposed to infer that these are the four brothers. I mean, there's four guys in uniform. But now we got to jump ahead here outside of our week of episodes. But the last time all four guys were together, according to Jimmy later in the film, it was the night before one of them.
Right before
Daniel went to boot camp.
That's
so they've never been all together in uniform. There's no way.
Oh, wow. That's great. I didn't even think about it from that perspective. You're right.
And I never would have if I hadn't just rewatched the movie recently in advance of this. And it just stuck out for me that, you know, linearly going through the film, when I see this picture sitting there, I think, oh, there's the four brothers. And then later, when he's telling the story about, you know, that kind of ribald story, again, and I don't want to get too far ahead because it's way outside of our episodes, but if it's the night before you went to boot camp and it's the last time you were together, then, and especially if it was one of the older guys, because if it was the night before one of the older guys went to boot camp, then at least arguably, at least Jimmy, the youngest, probably hasn't been yet. It's not impossible, but you know, if he's If he's younger, he probably hasn't gone yet. But I, you know, I like finding little Easter eggs like this or little hiccups, little clues, but it does nothing to change my appreciation for the film.
Okay, well, the first thing I'm going to say to you then is put a pin in this because we will discuss it tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay, because again, it's a big question as to what is right and what is wrong with your comment and with other things that are mentioned in the movie. Because tomorrow something is going to be mentioned that will seemingly contradict Jimmy's story. Let's put it that way.
Perfect.
But we'll have to wait until we get there tomorrow. All right. I was trying to find something with the V for Victory, and the closest that I could find is a picture of one that has it has on the top part of both sides of the V stars in blue, and then the bottom part of the V is white and red stripes, but that's not what we see here. So, you know, maybe it was just a makeshift one. I don't know.
Yeah, it could have been something that she made herself, or you know, neighborhood kids make for morale boost. Who knows? But yeah. But it certainly looks very plausible. It looks like absolutely like something you would have seen in a home of that era.
Yeah, definitely, and it makes sense, you know, especially if she's you know, entertaining other people in her house who just left. Maybe that's what bothers her. Maybe that's what's making her curious. Someone just left the house. You know, so why is there someone who's coming now? I just finished eating.
Who's coming back?
That's right.
Yeah, did Mildred from the next farm over, you know, forget her purse or something?
That's right. Anything's possible.
Right, but sadly, not the case. Sorry, Margaret.
No, wishful thinking.
Right.
On her part that... You know, I mean, I mentioned before about the name of the actress. So she actually also appears in a very small role in another movie that I'm a big fan of. She was in United 93.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah. I mean, she had a small part in the Cleveland Tower. You know, wow. So she's the Cleveland supervisor. I mean, she has 57... IMDb credits, so she has had a very nice and long career over her. Sure. I guess she's how old is she now? She's about 70. She was born 40. No, she's 76 as of recording. She was born in 48. Yeah. So, and then she walks towards. She's still looking out the window, and again, this is an amazing shot. Even just the whole way, the whole shot is framed. Because again, we have the pictures on the right hand side that are framed by the door, and then on the left hand side of the screen, we have you know, a look out through the door frame where we see the army car coming towards the house, and then Mrs. Ryan is completely in silhouette. And it's just really cool, just looking at the way that all it fits in together.
Yeah, it's really nicely lit. It puts the focus back on the car, but you know, with the whole little tableau of the radio and the pictures and everything on the right side still being lit, that gives us, to me, it gives it a little bit of warmth. And it, you know, balances the inside versus the outside.
Yep, for sure. All right, that's all I have to say about this minute. You have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Nope, I think this one's buttoned up, but I'm intrigued about where we're going to go with it tomorrow.
All right.
See about whether my concern based on Jimmy Ryan's future story ends up being true or not. So
we'll have to see. Again, with any of analysis that's done in Movies by Minute, it is all pure speculation. There's absolutely. These are things that you will never get true answers on. So right. You know, it's one of those things where it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. You know, sure. There's no way of knowing which is correct. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances. So once again, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
All right. So number five for me, is Tom Hanks as Walt Disney in Saving Mr. Banks. Number four, Agent Hanratty in Catch Me If You Can, a film that I just absolutely adore. Then Jimmy Dugan in A League of Their Own and the whole classic There's No Crying in Baseball. Then next one for me was Big. And at the top of the list is, it's an odd choice because it's not necessarily, I mean, it has to be my favorite performance of his because it's the thing that made me recognize him and know who Tom Hanks was and made me, you know, decide that I really liked him and wanted to see other stuff that he would do as his career progressed. But an old show that a buddy of mine and I watched religiously when we were teenagers, a show that I would say has not aged well. And that was Bosom Buddies. So we decided that was at a time where, you know, there's three networks, and if you're going to watch a sitcom, you've got at best three choices at any given time. And somehow a friend of mine and I decided we really liked that. It was my buddy Ryan. And, you know, he liked Peter Scolari's character and I liked Tom Hanks' character. And that's, you just realize it's Tom Hanks' guy. He's probably going places. Now, my honorable mentions would be, in no particular order, Dragnet. Tom Hanks is Jim Lovell in Apollo 13, which I think is a stellar movie across the board. And I thought his turn as Fred Rogers in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood was quite good as well.
Okay, very fair. I'm glad I didn't. I would have bet money that Apollo 13 would be within your five.
It's tough. It's really close. Yeah. If I didn't feel like I had to include Bosom Buddies just because of the chronology of it, then yeah, Apollo 13 probably would have been up there and not necessarily at the bottom either. It's just, it's tough. Right. He's a talented guy. He's done so much, you know. I mean, Castaway is terrific. So many other things.
Yeah, for sure. I'll have to wait and see what Hal and Chris are going to, you know, how high they're going to put that up there and for them.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, no. Did I say Hal and Chris? I meant Jim and Chris.
Jim and Chris.
That's okay. Hal has already told us.
Yes. Right. I put my stake in the ground.
There you go. And knowing Jim, he probably won't put it as number one. He'll find something obscure. You know.
Yes. But I thought my early 80s sitcom was at least fairly obscure.
Oh, for sure. I have no problem with that. None whatsoever. Yes, but you're right. I probably should rewatch an episode or two of Bosom Buddies just to see how un-PC it really is at this point. Because I do recall enjoying it when it was on as a kid. Yeah,
I just, it was light and fun. I mean, it wasn't going to change anybody's lives or, you know, solve any of the world's problems or anything. No. Just, I suspect that it's would be considered a little bit problematic now, but for me as a kid, there was nothing in it but just pure innocence and escapades. I loved Tom Hanks and his wit.
Yep, for sure. I doubt he wrote he didn't write in his wit. He just was able to find a way to properly give it over.
Absolutely.
All right. Excellent. So Hal, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
All right. I'm all over the place online, but podcast, pop culture podcast wise, you can go out and check out the full run of the Rocketeer Minute. Again, when this airs, we should be done or within an episode or two of being done with the October Sky Minute. So back-to-back Joe Johnston directed features with an amazing array of terrific guests from the films and from related areas out in reality. And on social media, all the major ones, you just find me at Hal Bryan, and you send me a message, send me a friend request, say hello. I'd love to hear from anybody.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. You can send me an email to movearoundminute@movearound.net. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. And you can find me on Twitter. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this.